welcome everyone tonight again. Brought the wrong glasses, so if I see my notes, I won't be able to see you. Okay. In the line of way of announcements, I guess Sherry, Titus, and Amanda are still sick and need our prayers. Amanda's supposed to have surgery soon, tomorrow, did you say?
I don't know
the date. Okay, well, soon anyway. And they're both still sick, so that they need to get better for that surgery, I'm sure. Pastor's away. His brother-in-law passed away. They left for Chicago today to go down there to the funeral and those things. So pray for him and Sister Sharon as they travel back and forth, that the Lord will be with them while they're there as well. And all those others that have been mentioned from time to time, different ones, like you remember my brother, who's also in hospice. I haven't talked to him for quite a little while. So I'm going down there next week. Me and my sister, Bess, will be leaving Monday to travel down to Marietta. And you pray for us as we journey. Pray for me. Just pray for me. Like I say, being with my family is difficult for me. So pray for me that we'll get through it. And pray that my sister and her husband have a safe trip here in preparation for that trip. And all those that have lost loved ones lately, the season, this time of year is difficult. Whenever you've lost a loved one, no matter what time of the year, the holidays are some of the toughest times to get through. And you just pray for those that have lost loved ones especially at this time of the holidays. I'd like to ask Brother Steve, if you'd lead us this time.
Our dear Lord and Heavenly Father.
I'll be reading from initially from Psalms 14 and Psalms 53, verse 1. My lesson tonight, I've titled it "A World Without God." It's just kind of something that I thought about. The Lord put upon my heart. The question was, have you ever thought about what would happen when God is removed from society? And if you haven't ever pondered that, you need to really take a hard look at it, because it's a pretty serious situation. That's what, you know, society today wants to achieve. Those that are in control. Remember, Pastor Gordon brought that message about how they've been for years, working on the schools, public schools, trying to change the perception of the kids, and that there is no God, that God isn't necessary, and that's been going on for years, and especially with the Obama administration, society has really moved to what we would call the left significantly, or tried to anyways. But I think maybe the recent election has stayed that a little bit. We'll see. But these people, the people in society, they want no mention or sign of God anywhere in public view. And if they could, they would come right into your home and take it out of there too, should they be so bold. In some countries, they can do that. But I want you to think about a society where there is no God, or where God is not allowed. And the God I'm referring to, of course, is the God, Jehovah, God the Father, the triune God, the creator of the universe. And you need to ask yourself, you know, if God was removed from everything, who would be making up the rules and passing laws in our society? Who would be left to do that? God would not be allowed as a consideration for making up a rule or a law anymore. And over the past few years, I believe we've had a glimmer, just a glimmer, of what and who would be in control of such a society. And you only need look at the recent election cycle to understand the people that want that they thought were in control until this election. They were just going with it, you know, the liberal minded, progressive minded people. And you also need to ask yourself, what would be the basis of the rules and the laws that would be passed? I mean, without God, without the Bible, without any sort of moral code, you know, what kind of laws and rules would you have? Who would make them up? What would be their yardstick, if you will, to determine what's right and what's wrong? It'd be completely humanistic in nature. And again, you see that out in society today. These special interest groups, these small groups, go out and they are in your face about everything, and they're just a minority. They're just a small. They're not even a minority. They're a minority of the minority, if you will. But yet, they're given an audience, and they're allowed to shout down anybody that opposes them. And that's the kind of thing that you would be confronted with if there was no God at all. And it would be even worse. There'd be no standard for right and wrong, good and bad. Who's to say what's good? Who's to say what's bad? What's right? What's wrong? And those that would be making up the rules of conduct for a society without God are those that the Bible, I believe, those are the people that the Bible refers to as fools. And if you look in Psalm 14, verse 1, it says, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good." And Psalm 53 and verse 1 is just about exactly the same phrasing, the same words, just arranged a little different. It says, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. Corrupt are they. They have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good." So this was significant enough for the psalmist to actually repeat it in two different psalms. And so I want to go through some of these things here that are in these verses. And they tell us that, these verses tell us that those who believe there is no God are fools. That's what the psalmist says here. They're fools. And I found several Hebrew words in the Bible using Strong's numbers and stuff. I forget how many different variations of the word there are, but I found at least three. There might be four or five, possibly more. I didn't check them all. All these words have been translated as fool or foolish or something like that. But they all mean, you know, something senseless, somebody senseless. To be senseless or to be stupid or just foolish, to be foolish. To act senseless and or stupid, you know, that's what those words mean. In the original language. And I want to spend time on the word fool as it's used in these two psalms, because we need to have a really clear picture of what's being said here and what type of person a fool is in their heart. And I think the best way to do that is to look at some definitions from the dictionary concerning these words. Again, you know, Strong's just says, you know, they're stupid, they're foolish, to be a fool. That it's not very explanatory. So I went to, you know, the regular English dictionary and looked up fool, and I got a definition that says a person who acts unwisely or imprudently, a silly person. And I want you to take notice of the words imprudently and silly that the dictionary writers use to define fool, because I want to look at the definitions of those words. And imprudent is not showing care for consequences of an action. So a fool is a person that doesn't care about the consequences. And silly, again, that was used to define a fool, a silly person. It said having or showing a lack of common sense or judgment. And they're absurd. Which led me to look up the word absurd, okay? And absurd is defined as wildly unreasonable, illogical, or inappropriate. And I found that to be interesting, that definition to be interesting, because absurd being connected to fool in a kind of a roundabout way, it describes many of the people we have seen on the news during the recent campaign and the election aftermath. They're wildly unreasonable and illogical and inappropriate. Not just the liberal side, but the conservative side as well. I mean, these people are well, they're out there. Let's put it that way, I guess. And you know, it like I heard people talking. I watched most of the Republican convention, and I watched part of the Democratic convention when it was happening on television. And I was amazed, in particular, at the difference between the two conventions, where the conservatives were reserved, seemed to be more reserved, more logical, more whatever you want to think. They had, to me anyways, I guess because I'm conservative, it made a whole lot more sense, you know. I didn't care for the candidate, but what they were saying kind of resonated with me, and I liked what I heard for the most part. When I watched the Democratic convention, it was pure emotion. They were driven by their emotions more than they were logic, more than they were common sense. I saw people weeping when Hillary Clinton was nominated as the presidential candidate. This vile, despicable person. They were so enthralled with her and weeping over it. And that just seemed so illogical to me. How could anybody be that taken by this person? How can anybody really be that taken by even Donald Trump? And so that's what I saw, and that's the way I felt. And they were absurd. That's a good word. They were unreasonable, illogical, or inappropriate. And furthermore, the word absurd, they're not just reasonable, illogical, or inappropriate, but they're wildly that way. And I looked up the word wildly, and that was defined as an uncontrolled or excited way, in a wild way, very wild or extremely wild. Unrestrained, especially in pursuit of pleasure. And that seemed, you know, that word, that's a pretty good, you know, that's a pretty good word. It takes in a lot, that word absurd. And wildly, the fact that they used wildly with these other words, it just shows that the uncontrolled and unrestrained way of the fool, because all these words are connected back to the definition of a fool. The pursuit of a fool, or whatever they want, is completely out of control and uninhibited. And they are extreme, and they will not stop. Consequences was used in the definition of imprudent. And consequences, of course, is a result or effect of an action or a condition. Excuse me. Consequences is important because it's used in the definition of imprudent. Clearly, the people who are fools do not care about the consequences of their actions. If they cared, they would think a little bit more about it, I believe. But because they're absurd, they're wildly illogical, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't think about those things. And so they're not really worried about the consequences. And that's why they are absurd, okay? Because they don't care, because they're uncontrolled, and they're illogical, and they're out there. They're wildly that way. They're extremely that way. Now, if you put this all together, and that's what I tried to do, a fool is someone who acts unwisely. They do not care what the result is or the effect their actions have. They lack common sense and judgment. They do not lack good judgment or have poor judgments. They just simply lack judgment altogether. They can't make good decisions. They can't make good judgments. They can't make bad judgments. They're just illogical, okay? So they couldn't really make... They don't have no judgment. They are unreasonable, illogical, they're inappropriate, and those things result from lack of judgment. You can't be reasonable, you can't be logical, and you can't be appropriate and lack judgment, in my opinion. That is what results. The fools are incapable of making good, sound decisions, and they are relentless. They're out of control. They are extreme in their views and their actions. So you kind of put all that together, and you've got a really basically a crazy person, in my opinion. Without God, this type of person would be the ones who would be making up the rules. Can you imagine someone like that being in charge? But some people like that are in charge in this country and in our governments and in our all around us. People like that exist and are in control of things. They'd be making up the rules and the laws that we'd have to live by. We would be governed by fools, and God would not be a part of their decisions and their rules and their laws or anything. And again, they have said in their heart, there is no God. So why even consider anything like that? And again, in the Psalms, those two Psalms, Psalm 14, verse 1, and Psalm 53, and verse 1, it says, they are corrupt. Now, corrupt means to be tainted or rotten, or of low morality. Okay? So a fool... Because they are corrupt, because they are fools, and they have said there's no God, they are corrupt. They are tainted, and their morality is lowered to the point of non-existence in some cases. That is what corrupt means. Not only are they tainted and rotten, they are out of control with it. And that's the scary part. They're out of control with it. And they're unrelenting with it. They just keep coming at you all the time. They never give up. They never back off. And they only get worse. Unless God saves their soul, they're just going to get worse and worse and worse. People are just going to get worse and worse. And their corruption is extreme, because that's part of the definition of a fool. They're extreme. They're absurd. They lack judgment. They have no moral code to go by. There is no God in their heart, because the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And it says, to continue on in the psalm, it says, they have done abominable works in Psalm 14:1, and Psalm 53:1, it says, they have done abominable iniquities. The fool has done and will do things that disgust God. That's what abominable means. Okay, it's abhorrent to God. Think of something someone does that completely disgusts you. And I'm sure, you know, you've had something that someone has done, or you've seen something or heard something or heard about something that's just really disgusting. Think of some of the things you saw and heard in the recent campaign, in the post-election protests, that totally make you disgusted and even angry. And if you've watched the news at all, I'm sure you've seen something that's some behaviors that are bizarre and anger that anger you, that why would they be doing that? People smashing things, burning things, yelling at people, beating bystanders, innocent bystanders, just beat them up because, you know, they look like they supported, you know, the wrong candidate. It's disgusting, and it's distasteful. It's crazy behavior. It's insane behavior, and it makes you angry. That is what abominable means to God. Okay? And I think it's even worse with God, because God is perfect. Amen. And he cannot stand anything. He tolerates us, which is amazing if you really think about it. If you really think about God and his treatment of us, It's truly an amazing thought to have. It should be a very humbling thought to have. But that's a small example. If you think of something like that, that's just a small example of how the fool's corrupt acts make God feel. The fool believes man is basically good. And if you watch... I mean, if you watch the news, if you watch television at all, which I mean, about the only thing I watch is news anymore, and I'm about to quit watching that too, because it's just the same. It's just more of the same. But the fool believes that man is basically good. The humanist mantra is that man is good. In his heart. That's what they think. The heart of man, his inner being, okay, the thing that's in you that makes you who you are, your soul. The fool thinks that that inner man is basically good and will do good and cares about his fellow man, cares about helping his fellow man, supporting his fellow man, looking after his fellow man. But the Bible tells us what the heart is really like. If you look in Jeremiah 17:9, it says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked." And this verse says that when it says deceitful above all things, the heart is many things. Our heart is many things. But the chief thing it is it's deceitful. And it's desperately wicked. Mankind's inner being, the thing that makes them who they are, is given to causing others. Well, first of all, we need to define what deceitful is. I apologize for that, but deceitful is leading others or making others believe something that is not true, typically in order to gain some personal advantage. That's the definition of deceitful, and that's what mankind's heart is above all else. The short version of that is mankind is basically a liar. That's what they do. That's what drives people, is they lie to get gain. They lie for personal gain or get some advantage. That's what the fool's heart is like, because he doesn't have God in his heart. He said there is no God. So he's given over to his own carnal nature, which Jeremiah says is deceitful. He also says that he's desperately wicked. And desperately is defined here, desperately wicked is defined here as incurable. Man left to himself will never get better. He'll only get worse. Because there's no cure for mankind's heart within mankind themselves. And it says in Psalm 14:1 and in 53:1, the last part of that verse says, "There is none that doeth good." That part of the psalm clearly states that someone who is a fool, who in their heart has said there is no God, that none of these people do good. Despite their thinking that mankind is basically good, they're not. The Bible tells us that they're not. We are not capable of it as human beings, left to ourselves. And not only are there none of us good, we're incurably that way. We're deceitful. We're liars. That's what deceitful means. We lead people astray for personal gain. We make them believe something that doesn't exist. And that's what the humanist movement is trying to do. It's trying to make you believe that we don't need God. We can get along just fine without God. We're basically good, and we know what's best for us. Because we're man. We know we have it. But the Bible disputes that, I believe, over and over again. Romans 3:23, it says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." Romans 5:12 says, "Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned." It didn't say, you know, this group or that group. It said all. All people are that way. All have sinned, and all have come short of the glory of God. These are the people that would be making up the rules and passing the laws in a society without God. They've said in their heart there is no God. They are corrupt. They care nothing about consequences of their actions. They have no judgment because they have no moral code to guide them. They have no common sense. They're out of control. They're illogical. They're extreme. They're deceitful. None of them have any good within them. That's what the Bible says about the fool. Fortunately, in society today, we have God, and He's in control. That's the one thing that we have going for us as people in this world, that God is in control of it. He's given us a moral code that we might have judgment, that we might have some basis to live by. Can you imagine not having a moral code to live by? Just look out there in the world at people that don't have a moral code, that don't know anything about God. Look at their life. Granted, not everybody is that way, but most people are really messed up when you think about it. Their lives are a mess. Their lives are complicated. Their lives they go from one conflict to another. That's all they know is conflict in their life. And God is the only thing that's keeping this country from total anarchy. You look at what's happened in this post-election cycle with the riots in the streets and the protests and so on and so forth. Can you imagine if God removed his restraining hand from this nation? What could happen? You think, nothing could happen. We could be in a revolution very easily. It's not over yet, in fact. We don't know what could happen. And the one thing we do know is it can happen very quickly. Like I said, the last time I was here, nobody thought Donald Trump was going to win the election. I don't even think Donald Trump thought he was going to win the election. And overnight, things are completely different. That's how fast things can happen. God has given mankind a moral code which we live by. The Bible. He's given us the Bible. That moral code, the Bible gives us a sense of right and wrong. It's a measurement tool that we employ every day. Every decision we make has that sense of right and wrong applied to it. I can't think of a time when you do something. I mean, sure, there's things that you decide, that you may do, that make decisions that you're not deciding, is this the right thing to do? But we talk of that. Is this the right way to do it, or is this the wrong way to do it? We employ those words all the time. And without a moral code, there is no right or there is no wrong. It's just, you could do it this way or you could do it that way. It doesn't matter which way you do it. It doesn't matter how you do it. Without any kind of guidance of right or wrong or moral code, there is no right or wrong. Is it wrong for a boy or a girl that identifies as the opposite sex to go into the bathroom that they identify with? Well, without a moral code, no, there's no right or wrong with that. And that's what society's was trying to push on us. Maybe still is trying to push that on us. We don't know yet. But without a moral code, those are the kinds of things that happen. Those are the kinds of things that get made. Pretty soon there won't be a men's and a woman's bathroom. There'll just be a bathroom. And we'll probably all end up having to use it. If things in this world stay long enough, if we're here long enough, it can get that way. And that like I said, every decision we make, we apply that sense of right and wrong. And it is that sense, that moral code that God instills in his people that directs our walk in this world today. And I said God's people, you know. Salvation in Jesus Christ is the only answer to this world's problems. Without Christ in your life, without Christ in your heart, you don't have that sense of moral code like God would like us to have. Without salvation, mankind has no hope. Fortunately, man's heart can be changed. The fool's heart can be changed. And God's the only one that can change it. Man's heart will never be perfect as long as we're in this body and we're in this world. And I believe that. But we have just a little glimpse. God gives us just a little glimpse of what it will be like to have a pure heart through salvation by Jesus Christ. He gives us peace in our heart. He gives us calm in our life if we let him. That's another thing that we struggle with, because we're dual-natured when we're saved. We have the Spirit of God within us, but we still have our carnal nature to deal with. And I've told you the story of the cucumber and the pickle. That the cucumber is immersed in the vinegar and brine solution and left there for a time. And when it's removed, when the work of the solution is done, the cucumber is no longer a cucumber. Excuse me, it's turned into a pickle. The new pickle still shows the evidence of its former life as a cucumber, but it will never be a cucumber again. It is forever changed. And so it is with mankind when Christ enters our heart. We are forever changed. We're no longer what we were. Our heart is different. It's changed. Christ is in our heart now, in our being, in our inner man. And it changes you. And if it hasn't changed you, then there's something wrong. Perhaps Christ hasn't entered your heart. When we have Christ present within us, our thinking is different. Our actions and our reactions are different. Our point of view is different. We put emphasis on other things. The world is no longer our home. I think that's the biggest thing that we come to realize. I think as a young person, you know, I didn't realize it as much as I do the older I get. I think we mature in the Lord in as we age, and our outlook gets more and more to the point where we don't want to be here anymore. This world is just not where we want to be. And we know that we don't belong here. And it's just different. You know, you're just different. You act different. You talk different. You go to different places. We're not comfortable with the same people in the same places we once were. I know some people, when they're first saved, they try to go back to their friends, their worldly friends, and tell them their experience, and they just like, woohoo, dude, get a grip, you know. I think you're losing it, you know. And the more you tell them, the less they want to be with you. And maybe sometimes we don't understand initially what happened, you know, why would they reject us? But as we learn about what's happened to us, we fully understand it, that they don't want to be with us anymore. Right. And then we realize we don't want to be with them either, because they're not like us anymore, or we're not like them anymore. And we're just different, and we just don't want to be together with our old friends like we used to be. And there's some verses here in John 14:17. I just want to read the snippets from these verses here that I want to point out. It says, John 14:17, the last part of the verse there, it says, "But ye know him, for he dwelleth within you, and shall be in you." And then in Romans 8:11, the last part of that verse there, it says, "His spirit that dwelleth in you." 1 Corinthians 3:16, "The spirit of God dwelleth in you." 1 John 3:24, it says, "He that keepeth his commandments dwelleth in him, and he in him. And whereby we know that he abideth in us by the Spirit which he hath given us." So God dwells within us. Christ dwells within us when we're saved and we're changed and we're no longer the cucumber. You know, we've become a pickle, so to speak. And we'll never be able to go back to what we once were, because we've been changed. We've been changed in our heart, and we can't go back. We can't ever be that way we were. I know some people have tried. And I think people that have left church and stayed out of church, that were saved and they've stayed out of church for years, they're never comfortable where they are. They're never happy where they are, truly happy. They put on a good face when you talk to them and different things like that. Oh, yeah, you know, I'm saved. I know I'm saved. But I haven't been to church for years. You know, and maybe they're not despicable people. Maybe they're not going to the bars. Maybe they're not doing things that we find distasteful. But still, they're not happy people, because they know. You know, they can't be with the people that they used to be with, and they can't be with the people that they know they should be with. And they're between two worlds, and they're not happy. They're just not happy. Once we are saved and Christ is dwelling within, our desires change. Our life is no longer about us. That selfishness that drives the fool is gone. That selfishness that causes the fool to be deceitful, his heart to be deceitful, his heart to lie, to lead people astray for his personal gain. That's gone from us. Our desire to serve God in Christ, our desire is to serve God in Christ in any way we can. That should be our first concern. God should be first in our life. Matthew 6:33, and I use that verse a lot. It tells us to seek God's kingdom and His righteousness first, and let Him supply our needs. Again, you know, needs are different than wants. But God can give us our needs, and He can give us our wants too. He make us able to do those things. But that should be our focus, to first focus on God. That's what we should be doing. In John, 1 John 2, in verses 3 through 6, and it says, "And whereby we do know that we know Him, if we keep His commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar." What do you think that means? He's a liar. That means he's a fool, right? "And the truth is not in him." That deceitful, desperately wicked heart has not been changed. "But whoso keepeth his word, in him verily is the love of God perfected. Hereby know we that we are in him, and he that saith he abideth in him ought himself also to walk even as he walked." So we ought to follow after God. We ought to, or Christ, we ought to be like Christ. We ought to do the things that Christ did. And then in 1 Peter 4, verses 1 through 4, it says, "Forasmuch then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind." In other words, be like Christ. Okay? Arm yourself to be in the world and know the things that Christ knew and say the things that Christ said and do the things that Christ did. Arm yourself with the same mind as Christ. That's what that means. "For he hath suffered in the flesh, For he that suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. He that no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lust of men, but to the will of God. And that tells us that the heart has been changed, and that he's no longer a fool, that he wants to do, to be in the will of God, that he's not going to follow after, live his life the rest of his time in the flesh and to the lust of men. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries. What does that describe to you as those things that people, that these people used to do before they were saved? They didn't have God in their heart. They were fools. They said there is no God. And so they did all these things. They walked in lasciviousness, lusts, excess, revelings, banquetings, abominable idolatries. They were corrupt people. That's corruption. Wherein they, those that are fools, those that have said there is no God, think it strange that ye run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. When you're saved and you don't do those things anymore, they turn on you. They start speaking evil of you. Your Facebook friends, that's basically what they become. They're, you know, they want to know what you're doing, but they don't want to associate with you. That's kind of the way I feel Facebook is all about. But that's another story. When Christ enters your heart, you change. You have a new life, you have new values, you have new priorities. You look different, you act different, you talk different. You won't go to the same places you once did. People notice that. Your former friends notice that. Hey, let's go to the bar and have a drink. No, I don't want to do that anymore. Well, what do you mean? We used to do that all the time. That was fun. Well, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't think that's right, you know. Well, see ya. You know, they're gone. Your friends will notice that, and your friends from your old life will think you've gone crazy. And you know what? You will think that of them. You will think they're crazy. How in the world could they possibly continue to do that? That's what you wonder about people that are out there in the world that do these things. They will not want to be around you, and you won't want to be around them. The thing that we need to do here is stated in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 7. It says, "But the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer." And then in Luke 12, 35 and 36, "Let your loins be girt about and your lights burning, and ye yourself like unto men that wait for their Lord when he will return from the wedding, that when he cometh and knocketh, they may open unto him immediately." These verses tell us that we need to be vigilant. We need to watch and be aware of what's going on around us. Just like in this past election cycle, you know, we needed to know what was going on. We've experienced this stuff going on for 8 years, getting worse and worse and worse, and we needed to be aware of that. You need to know what's going on out there. We should be ready to stand against those things. The fools in this world are trying to impose upon us all. But I'm not advocating that we go out and protest like they do, that we throw a fit like they do, that we smash things up and burn things and beat up people and that. I'm not advocating that at all. But I'm advocating, or what I'm saying, the most powerful thing that we can do, I guess I'm advocating it, is to pray. And I think that had a big influence in this past few days. The prayers of God's people made a difference. pray that God will keep the fools of this world in check to the degree that His people can tolerate it, be tolerable for His people. You know, the Bible tells us that God will not put upon us more than we can withstand. And maybe that's why things have changed. We hope for the better, that maybe it was getting to the point where we just couldn't stand it anymore. And so the Lord pulled back a little bit. And to motivate you to pray, think of a town, a state, a country, and a world governed by fools. That should scare you. If it doesn't, if you don't have a clear picture of that, then you need to get one. A land where those in control have said in their heart, there is no God. Where they are corrupt, they care nothing about the consequences, there's no judgment, and so on and so forth. The thought of such people being in control should cause you to pray fervently every day for this country and God's people around the world. And if it doesn't, then I feel sorry for you. I really do. Brother Jim, you want to lead us in a song?